Hello, friend. Thank you so much for downloading this podcast, and I hope you hear something truly, I mean this from the bottom of my heart, something that edifies, equips, enlightens, encourages, and then gently but firmly gets you out there into the marketplace of ideas. I so appreciate your taking the time to listen. But before you start the broadcast, let me just take a moment and explain that this month's truth tool is called SEEK, S-E-E-K, written by my friend David Robertson, my favorite Scottish apologist who is currently serving the Lord in Australia. He comes and visits with us once a month. And he wrote a book called Ask, and now he's written a follow-up book called Seek, Real Word Answers to Real World Questions. And so he literally goes through a whole series of questions like, is there ever a good lie? Or does the Bible have mistakes? Or what does the Bible say about climate change? Or what's the difference between capitalism and communism? And the list goes on and on and on. So it is a fabulous reference book that I know you're going to want to put in your legacy library. So if you'd like a copy of Seek, and we are listener-supported radio, I'd love to send one to you when you give a gift of any amount to support In the Market with Janet Parshall. Simply call 877-JANET-58, that's 877-JANET-58, and offer a gift of any amount. We'll send you a copy of David's book, Seek. Or if you'd rather do it online, go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Scroll to the bottom of the page. There's the cover. It has a brain on the cover, so you can't miss it. Click on the cover of the book, make your gift right through the website, and we'll send you a copy of Seek by David Robertson. Great tool to have, one of those important little volumes in your ready reference library, and I know you're going to be blessed. By the way, when you're on the website, you might want to consider being a Parshall partner. Those are people who give every single month at a level of their own choosing. They always get whatever the truth tool is that particular month. And in addition to that, they get a newsletter that contains an audio piece from me as well. So Parshall partner or just this month's truth tool, either way, it helps us financially to keep moving forward. 877-JANET-58, 877-JANET-58, or online at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Now please, enjoy the broadcast.
Here are some of the news headlines we're watching.
By the time the conference was over, the president won a pledge.
So Americans worshiping government over God.
Extremely rare safety move by a nation.
17 years, the Palestinians and Israelis negotiated.
This
Hi, friends. Welcome to In the Market with Janet Parshall. Thrilled we're going to spend the hour together because this hour, I guarantee you, we're going to be challenged to think biblically and critically, not an either-or proposition. It is a both-and. And I want to start with a very important word that I believe will weave its way in and out of our conversation this hour, and it is the word integrity. Now, for followers of Jesus Christ, remembering that we are His ambassadors, the word integrity should be integral in our lives. If you look it up and you review its meaning as a noun, it means the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles, moral uprightness. As an example, he is known to be a man of integrity. Well, authentic Christianity, I think, would require integrity in our lives as people who represent Jesus Christ. The word also has another meaning, the state of being whole and undivided. Here's an example, upholding the territorial integrity and national sovereignty. The state of being whole and undivided. And one of the things that's held this nation together, young though we may be, for almost 250 years, has been the integrity that we have been able to find in the process of our elections. We are unlike any other nation on planet Earth. Here, the power does not come from a king. It comes from the people, from the bottom up, not the top down. And as it says, painted in the Capitol Dome in Madison, Wisconsin, the capital of that particular state, the will of the people is the law of the land. And that's something that our founding fathers understood. They had a monarchy, thanks but no thanks. Their backs were bent with the idea that when the king opened his mouth, he was God's representative, and whatever he said was the law. Rex lex. And along came a believer by the name of Samuel Rutherford who took that idea, tipped it on its head, and called it lex rex, that in fact it was the law that was the most important part of our self-governance, not the king. So integrity is crucial, and it is the superglue that's held us together as a nation and bound our elections together. But you and I are very aware that something is wrong. There's something rotten, not in Denmark, but here in the United States, where somehow election integrity seems to be an idea that's passé. And that situational ethics, or if I can put it in more common parlance, ardent humanism, basically says any means whatsoever is justifiable as long as I get to my desired end. That's the opposite of being someone who subscribes to objective, knowable truth, truth that applies to all people in all times and all places. So I would say that the challenges for our elections represent the challenges to the human heart in the United States today. So we're going to take a look at the idea of election integrity and the will of the people this hour, how the two go hand in hand, and what we as followers of Christ can do. Now, I'm going to offer one caveat at the beginning of this conversation. Partisans, stand down. This is not a political conversation. It is a process conversation. You can argue, whether you agree or disagree, that elections have been stolen in the past, and that's great. My suggestion is you not have that conversation over Thanksgiving dinner. Somebody's going to grab for the antacids rather quickly. But because we are followers of Christ on this program, on this network, we're going to look at the process and what we can do as men and women of God, men and women of integrity, what we can do to ensure that integrity still defines the election process in this country. I am thrilled that I get to spend time yet again with former Congressman Jody Heiss. He has written a brand new book called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. Congressman Heiss currently serves as the senior vice president at the Family Research Council, but this man has such a fascinating story to tell, and he writes about it at some length in his new book. He previously served as the representative of Georgia's 10th congressional district for 8 years. He was born in Atlanta, raised in Tucker, Georgia, got his bachelor's from Asbury in Kentucky, a master's of Divinity from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, a doctorate of ministry from Luther Rice Seminary, and he served as a pastor in Texas and Georgia for almost 25 years. Along the way, he picked up a microphone, hosted a talk show that went out over 400 stations, did that for 11 years. But while he was in Congress, he served on some important committees, the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, the House Committee on Natural Resources, and in addition, at different points during his time in Congress, he served as ranking member of the Subcommittee on National Security, very important committee, by the way, and ranking members of the Subcommittee on Government Operations. So he's been there, done that, and he has a lot to say about election integrity. Congressman, it is a joy to have you back on the program. Congratulations on the new book. And I want to start exactly as you did in the book. Last time we met, we kind of had to go fast forward through your fascinating life. But you really laid it out in this particular book. And I think you did, because what you wanted to share with the reader is how God calls when you say yes. Very often he takes us to unexpected places. But you said yes, and you wanted to be a pastor. You saved when you were 13. And you were called into the ministry and pursue it with the passion you did. And you moved back and forth to various churches and you loved the Lord. But then one day when you were serving as a pastor, along came a heart cry for some of the people in your neck of the woods who said, you know what would be a good idea? Let's put the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, up in a government building. You thought it was a great idea. Pick up the story from there.
Well, Janet, well, first of all, what an honor to be with you again. I love your show and just how you've unfolded the groundwork even today is just spectacular. But yes, I was a pastor. That's my heart dream, my heart passion and calling since a young teenager. And we did have some people in our church. It was a county seat church, and so we had county commissioners and different local political figures who had given their lives to Christ and were part of our church family. And one of them said, we need to put the Ten Commandments in the courthouse. And so it was like, what a great idea. Let's do it. That's what our nation was founded on. That's what our rule of law is founded on. So we did so. And literally, our church family bought the Ten Commandments. One of our county commissioners in the church took his own hammer, his own nail, nailed it up after receiving approval, nailed up and placed the Ten Commandments in the courthouse. And there they were for several months, probably 6 months or so, until we received a call from the ACLU saying, this is illegal, we're coming after you. And things began to change at that point. And bottom line, just to kind of make a quick, long story short, I'll let you ask questions if you want to go from there. But the bottom line is the ACLU came after the county. I went before our county commissioners, along with literally thousands of other people in our county. The place was packed, standing room only. Even the parking lot had people standing. And I urged our commissioners to fight the ACLU, and they agreed to do so. And that was a turning point in my life.
You bet it was. And I want to pick up the story exactly at that point. By the way, at that meeting, someone was asked if they knew what the Ten Commandments said, and Pastor Heiss stood up and said all 10 of them. always being prepared to give a reason for the hope that resides within you. More with Congressman Heiss right after this. The Bible has the answers to questions being asked by the world, questions about abortion and heaven and even climate change. That's why I've chosen Seek as this month's truth tool. Discover how the Bible offers real word answers to real world questions. Ask for your copy of Seek when you give a gift of any amount to In the Market. Call 877-JANET-58, that's 877-JANET-58, or go to inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org. What a privilege to spend the hour with former Congressman Jody Heiss, serving the great people of Georgia's 10th Congressional District for 8 years. He also was a pastor for many, many, many years. So if I was going to be, and he has so many titles, I get to pick which one I want to use, but I would refer to him also as Dr. Jody Heiss, because he got his doctorate of ministry from Luther Rice Seminary, but currently today serves as senior vice president at the Family Research Council. And it's a joy to be able to visit with him because he's such a living example of just saying, here am I, Lord, send me, and saying, yes, Lord. So through his years as a pastor, through his years as a congressperson, and then now his years as serving and shaping public policy at the Family Research Council, he joins us today with a brand new book, so important. And I love books that are written from a bibliocentric perspective, so you can trust the source. And what's my saying to you all the time? You walk through life with the Bible in one hand, the newspaper in the other, and that's what Dr. Heiss has been doing for years. And so it's exemplary for you to learn from his story. The book is called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. So I'm going to go back to this desire to hang the Ten Commandments at the local courthouse, which, by the way, Congressman, you and I know this town. And if you and I were to go visit the chambers for oral arguments for the United States Supreme Court, if we sat where the Chief Justice sits on the bench and looking across the room, there is a frieze, which is sort of a 3D marble sculpture right opposite the bench where the justices sit. And smack dab in the center is, wait for it, Moses holding the Ten Commandments. Now, the frieze represents different kinds of law, but there in the center is the lawgiver, Moses himself. So it's not far afield. It's not out of bounds. It's not being a religious zealot. This was a building where law was going to be adjudicated, and it was simply a reminder of the transcendent law that applies to all of us all the time. So the people said, yes, let's do it. And I love the way that you said it isn't going to be a financial burden. Let's move forward. This happened for several months. But the ACLU got wind of this and decided no, along with their Unholy Alliance, the Freedom From Religion people, and Americans United for Separation of Church from Everything Under the Sun. And so the battle was joined, and it was an arduous battle. Just tell me some of the things you learned, because here's a pastor who I think is pure in heart, a man of integrity, who said hanging the Ten Commandments is a great idea, but now you were dealing with some junkyard dogs, and they are rabid to look at them.
Yeah, it never crossed my mind that the Ten Commandments would be considered illegal just because of what you're talking about. It's all over Washington, D.C. It's in the House of Representatives, in the Supreme Court. I mean, it's all – you cannot walk through Washington, D.C. without time and time again seeing the spiritual and Christian biblical foundation upon which our country was established. So it never crossed my mind, really, that this was going to be a problem, although – there were beginning to be some challenges in different parts of the country at that time with Chief Justice Roy Moore and that type of thing. And that our case happened to come along about the same time. And that's why, I guess, combined with some of the other cases, ours took on some national focus, some national attention. But, yeah, I just never dreamed that this was going to be the problem that it was. I went into it somewhat naive, I guess, but this is our First Amendment right. It's our biblical foundation. It is who we are as a country. And so that was my mentality when I first received a phone call that there was a challenge. I kind of just blew it off, thinking, okay, we'll deal with it, no problem. But the further we went into the case, the more I realized there is spiritual forces at work to eradicate, to silence, to distance anything that is biblically oriented in any shape, form, or fashion. And the heart of that in this particular time in my life was the Ten Commandments, the foundation upon which our legal jurisprudence was based upon as a country was under attack. And it was just like an eye-opening experience to see that. And I was dumbfounded by it, but with that, it's like, let's roll up our sleeves. Lord, help us. Let's fight for this. And that's how it went.
Well, in the midst of all of that, and of course, hindsight is always 20/20, but you had no idea that eventually the Lord was going to open the door and call you to Washington. Do you look back at that now thinking that this was part of the Lord's tutorial, that having this battle royale with the ACLU was some preparatory work for the work that God would call you to do in Washington?
There's no question. I look back at it now and I see the fingerprints of God all along the way. Had the Lord revealed to me at that point what he had in store, I would have probably run like Jonah. I don't know. But yeah, there was no doubt. This was the first battle. The next battle that came our way was with the IRS and over the Johnson Amendment and what can and cannot be said in pulpits across the country. And so I was engaged in that battle as well. And after those two battles, Janet, both of which took on national attention and kind of pushed me literally out of the pulpit and into a more national arena that I had never sought, had never dreamed of, did not desire. But it was through all that God was indeed preparing the way for Congress, and our congressman retired, and people started asking and calling upon my wife and I to pray about whether or not we would consider running for Congress, and we did so, and that's how the roadway ended up going for us to transition to Congress.
It's why I love your story, because you had no way of knowing that's where the Lord would take you. So, and I think this is such an important conversation for Christians who sort of retreat from the political process, and they unfortunately struggle with this false dichotomy that says we either evangelize or we engage the culture. I'm a graduate of the school that says, I don't know how you evangelize without engaging the culture. The two go together like a hand in glove. But when that opportunity came, when your friends and your counselors asked you and Dee Dee to start praying about whether or not you would run for office, not knowing anything about what it would take to run an election, did you have some of the stereotypical response that a lot of believers have? Ooh, we're going to hold our nose. Politics stinks. You know, can anything good come out of Washington? You know, if I can borrow from the scriptures a minute. And you're thinking, I'm really not interested in getting involved in this. What kind of personal wrestling did you do? Because from the pulpit to the Capitol Dome, it's a big different step.
Well, it is a huge step. And yes, I had all of those thoughts. But at the same time, going through these battles, I had become very much keenly, not just primarily focused, but teaching people, Christians, to be salt and light, to engage the culture. So it was like this was a time calling God calling me to step up to the plate as well.
So you couldn't just talk about it. God goes, well, you believe this, and I'm going to ask you to do the same thing. We're going to pick up the story at that point. The book is a fascinating story of a man who said, yes, Lord, but also a man of integrity who understands that if we lose that aspect of our electoral process, we do so at the peril of our nation. The book is called Sacred Trust. Fabulous book, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. Back after this. I am so grateful that you get to hear the heart of this man. The Bible tells us that out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So here's a man who loves the Lord. Came to faith when he was 13, said, yes, Lord, follows him into the ministry, does that, by the way, for almost 25 years, picks up multiple degrees along the way, undergrad at Asbury, Master's of Divinity from Southwestern Baptist, Doctor of Ministry from Luther Rice, pastors in Texas and Georgia for a quarter of a century. And then God begins to open doors of opportunity and challenge and says, here's the way, walk ye in it. And eventually, long story short, a door opens up. His friends, his counselor encourage him to run for Congress. And Dr. Heiss does just that, serving the people of Georgia's 10th Congressional District for 8 years. Also had his own radio talk show, so he understands the power of media, by the way, and to be able to platform good ideas. And now he serves as the Senior Vice President at the Family Research Council. So his new book is called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. And what you do, Congressman, is that you beautifully walk us through examples where integrity is the watchword. It is the scarlet thread that weaves its way through the experiences you had, whether it's how you're going to vote for the Speaker of the House, what you're going to do when you're called in to a pressure meeting in the Oval Office, all of those things where integrity was front and center. Do you serve God? Do you serve man? Do you go with the flow? Do we acquiesce because it's part of the political process? And I don't want to give too much of that away because I want people to read the book. It really takes us into your heart and the struggles that you had to deal with to maintain integrity despite the pressure. So for people who don't know Washington like you and I do, how does that happen? Because a lot of people think that this is the moment that C.S. Lewis was writing about, men without chests, that there is no moral compass, that people just do what they do to get vaulted up in a more important senior position on a committee or to get chairmanship of some committee, that they'll win favors, they'll be invited to the better parties, the inside conversations. So how does a man of God maintain his integrity when the external pressure is palpable in an environment like Washington?
Well, Janet, I can tell you the only way that I did it is, you know, fortunately, when I came to Christ at 13, I had some incredible individuals who invested their life in me and discipled me, got me in the Word quickly, and just grounded my life in Scripture and in a personal relationship with the Lord. And that has carried my life. And I just cannot imagine not having that relationship daily. And that was the anchor through Congress. I had I slept in my office, as do a number of other members of Congress. But I had the cleaning crew would come at 5 a.m. So I was up at 4:45 every morning. I'd run down, get a shower, all that sort of thing, come back up, and the cleaning crew was leaving, and it was early enough still that I could have my time alone with the Lord and in the Word, preparing for the day, preparing my heart for it. And that was the anchor. That is the only thing. Mm-hmm. That and my wife and friends, praying for us as a couple, praying for me, through that time. But the pressure is enormous in Washington. I don't think people can fully grasp what you were describing, the enormous pressure and deception, that if you want to be a person of influence, then you need to be on this committee or that committee. And in order to do that, then you need to be a team player. And here's what a team player looks like, kind of a thing. And all this just incredible pressure that's applied, and people even with good intentions, good hearts, arrive in Washington only to find themselves fairly quickly in a compromised position because they were told you need to do this in order to be influential and to do the things that brought you to Washington. And it ends up once you cave in, once there is a compromise, it's almost like the hook is set. Mm-hmm. It's like they've got you from that point on. And I think that happens over and over again.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, I think this is why Paul, among other things, teaches his pupil Timothy to pray for those in authority. I don't think people understand the kind of pressure that's brought to bear, that you may come up on somebody, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington, you're going to change things, and you're optimistic and you're idealistic. And then the sausage mill, as you write in the book, kicks in, and all of these things come to bear. So it's hard to sometimes maintain your position as a principled person serving first God and then secondarily the representatives of the district that brought you to Washington. So,
and Janet, if I could add to that, I was also not fully prepared, even spiritually, for the struggle of votes. I thought I was well grounded, but they put in a single bill over and over and over, things that I was fighting against as a pastor, sometimes for decades. But the very same bill would have things in it that I had been fighting for. Mm-hmm. For decades. And so here I'm dealing with a piece of legislation that's kind of darned if you do, darned if you don't. And it's like, Lord, what am I supposed to do with this bill? And I can't tell you the countless nights of just pacing in my office, crying out to God for wisdom for those types of things. And that for believers, you need to understand those type of struggles are in play in so many of these bills and pieces of legislation that representatives have to face.
Yeah. Oh, I am so thrilled that you're talking. I want to pull back the veil and help people understand that God puts his people everywhere, even under a Capitol dome in Washington, D.C., and they need our prayers. You just heard former Representative Heiss talk about sleeping in his office. That is not at all uncommon. It's very hard on marriages, by the way. They're separated from their families. He was up at 4:45 every morning, and then you plead for the wisdom of Solomon because you've got this bill, and as the representative Executive Heiss was just saying, some things are good, some things are bad. Lord, what do I do? Because of the power of the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, he gives wisdom liberally when we ask it. And I bet time and time and time again that Representative Heiss got just that. We need to be praying. I'm glad you're hearing his heart. Now, I want to get to this issue of elections and integrity, because this is where you and I come into play. Back after this. Christians are called to go into the marketplace of ideas. Throughout history, men and women of God have been thought leaders, innovators, and forces for good. We want this program to continue in that bold tradition. Join me by becoming a partial partner. Your monthly gift will make a difference as we help Christians take a bold stand in the marketplace of ideas. Call today, 877-JANET-58, or go online to inthemarketwithjanetpartial.org. This conversation is going far too quickly. We are already at the 50-yard line with former Representative Dr. Jody Heiss. He represented Congress, or the 10th Congressional District for Georgia. He currently serves as the Senior Vice President of the Family Research Council. Kudos to them for making an excellent choice. And he's got a new book out called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. And I'm going to dive into that feet first in a moment. But just as a capstone to what we were saying before, Dr. Heiss, when I talked about Christians, you get asked this probably 10 times more than I get asked it. And I get asked this all the time. Are there Christians in Washington? Breaks my heart a little bit to think that somehow this is Babylon and God doesn't have his people here. But there are. You write about this in the book where you say Christianity is alive and well in Congress. Can you share some of that with our friends?
Yes, you know, when I was on the radio, Janet, it was, one of the things that I did was trying to encourage people to step into the arena and get engaged Christian values in the arena. And one of the things, though, that I frequently found myself doing on the radio was when I was dealing with one issue or another, I was saying, Congress ought to do this, or they could do that, or this, that, and the other. And then I ended up being there. I realize it is an entirely different scenario in trying to move the needle than it was as someone just saying they need to do this, they need to do that. And one of the things that I fully anticipated going to Washington was being very much a loner spiritually, but I was pleasantly pleased. It was such a wonderful realization to see how many Christians were in Washington. There were prayer meetings, Bible studies frequently. In fact, I held one in my office for years. Mm-hmm. And so the believers were there, and we started almost every Republican meeting with prayer. But the struggle was, although the presence of Christianity was very much there, how those individuals' faith led them to vote was always a mystery to me, to be honest. It seemed like we continued to see a loss of our country, a loss of our values, a loss of our foundations, a perpetual chipping away at the foundations while there were so many professing believers that were there. And again, I think that circles back around to our previous conversation with the enormous pressure that these representatives face and the deception that many of them believe that in order to be influential, you must compromise here, compromise there. And as a result, I think it's a sad reality that many, even professing believers, at least from my experience, tended to forsake the values and principles that they believed for whatever. And I don't mean to cast judgment on them, but that was just my perspective and my experience, quite frankly, and it was very disheartening.
Yes, I'm quite sure. So because we get the privilege of sitting in your presence, teach us how to pray. How do we pray for our brothers and sisters whom God has called into this arena?
There's a couple of things. They desperately need prayer for their families. The stress on families is enormous. Secondly, the schedule. I never, ever, ever could have imagined the depth of busyness and a schedule that forever is nonstop. As you mentioned, I was up early in the mornings, but my days got started between 7:30 and 8 o'clock. My personal meetings with constituents and others were 15-minute increments all day long, only interrupted by a vote series at the floor or a hearing that I had to go to be involved with, or interviews or what have you. But it was just, and then when you're in the district, it's the same thing. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody in the district wants to see you. So the schedule was busy, but then just clinging to the principles, the foundations that most of these claim to embrace while going to Congress, it is such, the deception is so prevalent on so many fronts, and then the layer of pressure to conform to the demands of leadership or whatever it may be just adds to a web of potential confusion if you are not well grounded personally and if you don't have a strong network of believers around you, both praying and providing counsel and guidance along the way.
Amen. Thank you for that good word. First of all, Paul says to Timothy, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. This is good, and it's pleasing in the sight of God, our Savior. When you understand the pressure that's brought to bear, how easy it is to abandon those principles that should be written on the tablets of your heart and cannot be erased despite whatever cultural pressure is brought to bear, they need our prayers. And perhaps through this conversation today, this will intensify your prayers. They'll be more frequent when you're praying for those in authority, and you'll begin to understand that by God's mercy, we prevail as a republic. Now, that doesn't mean it's always going to happen, but we need to continue, and integrity is that gossamer thread that wraps us together. And that takes me to where I want to go. You write with eloquence about the challenges that Georgia faced in an election, but then you move into a section of the book where you really give us, I think, a transcendent tutorial that's so important. And you titled one chapter, Why Election Integrity Matters. That is a profound statement. And I'm not sure that everybody within the sound of our voice fully grasps that, because for a lot of people, it's like, vote. I'm one voice. What difference does it make? I'm one person. I don't really know the issues. It's the lesser of two evils. You, Representative Heiss, have heard every single excuse under the sun times 100. So explain why integrity in elections is foremost, and without it, our republic does not go forward.
Yeah, listen, thank you for that. This is like the epicenter, if you will, of the voice of the people. We are a country that is based upon the consent of the governed, not the consent of the governing. And it is the voice of the people. And we have so many problems that we're dealing with in our country. We could speak for hours about that, from the border mm-hmm. to the economy, to crime, to protesters, now to a weakened military, to global dominance, and on and on and on. But and underlying all of that is a spiritual battle, a spiritual mm-hmm. problem. But as it relates to the people, the single most powerful thing we have, apart from prayer and spiritual forces, I'm just talking about people who may not even know the Lord, is the right to vote, to be a people, a nation that operates based upon the consent of the governed. It is our voice. It is our ability to vote for who is going to represent us, and thereby the rules and laws under which we are going to live, that impacts our lives now, our future generations. And if ever, Janet, if ever that process of election integrity is compromised, then what do we do? I mean, where do we go from exactly. there? Mm-hmm. Look, elections are not about who wins or who loses. Elections are about whether or not the voice of the people and the will of the people was accurately heard and accurately counted. That is what elections are all about. My candidate may lose, but if it was a fair election, I can come back 2 years from now and try to sway people to vote otherwise. But if the election process was compromised, then what do we do? And really, this is why the title, this is a sacred trust that we have been given, both as voters and as elected officials, their duty, their sacred trust to ensure that the election process is going to be one of integrity and fairness.
Let me play the devil's advocate for a minute. I so appreciate what you just said. What about the naysayer who's listening right now saying, wait a minute, you just talked about how principled men come to Congress and they acquiesce to the pressure and then they go along with the flow and they don't vote their principles. They do whatever is going to be self-exalting. So why should I vote? Because men and women who I send up there are going to cave anyway. How do you respond to that?
Well, listen, we can't be the judge. I can tell you there's a lot of them that don't cave, and I don't want to draw a picture that everybody up there caves because not everyone does. But the pressure up there, I think what this really does is place upon us the necessity for us to pray for and stay in communication both with the families and the representatives that we have. Mm-hmm. But listen, it is not our ultimate responsibility what an individual does when they get elected. It is our responsibility to vote for and elect the most godly and righteous individuals that we can, and then entrust them to the Lord and pray for them as they move on, that they will stand firm, that they won't cave, that they will see the deceptions and the webs, and they'll have the wisdom of God to avoid those kinds of things. But we cannot operate by fear. Fear is such a paralyzing emotion that yes, not only prevents us individually, but even as a country. If we don't vote for righteousness out of fear, then the entire nation ultimately will suffer because of it.
Perfectly stated. Let me quote something. I don't usually do this, but it's so powerful, and I'm so glad you included it in your book, Sacred Trust. It's a quote from Noah Webster, known, of course, for the dictionary, also someone who professed a relationship with Christ. And he said, God commands you to choose for leaders just men who will rule in the fear of God, exactly what you were just saying. The preservation of a Republican government, that's not meaning Republican versus Democrat, a Republican government depends on the faithful discharge of this duty. If the citizens neglect their duty and place unprincipled men in office, the government will soon be corrupted. Laws will be made not for the public good so much as for selfish or local purposes. Corrupt or incompetent men will be appointed to execute the laws. The public revenues will be squandered on unworthy men, and the rights of the citizens will be violated or disregarded. That's Noah Webster. That word is as apropos today as when he said it hundreds of years ago. Back after this. Former representative of Georgia's 10th Congressional District, Dr. Jody Heiss, is with us, currently senior vice president at the Family Research Council, and he's got a brand new book out. I really commend this to you. You need to understand the process. You need to hear the story of one man who said, yes, Lord, starting at age 13, and how God has opened the doors for him, the challenges he's faced. And this, I think, will help you better understand with specificity how you can pray for those in authority. And not only that, but that the will of the people is, in fact, the law of the land. It's only by God's mercies that we have succeeded. As countries go, we're very young. We haven't even reached our 250th birthday yet. So if we start knocking away some of these basic supportive principles that have held us together for 250 years nearly, then we do so at our own peril. There's so much in the book I haven't been able to talk about, but if I've piqued your curiosity so that you'll get it, I will have done my job. This is a very important book. So just a couple of things, if I can, Dr. Heiss. You talk in one section of the book about principles that actually help secure elections. So a lot of people don't understand how the sausage is made. It's a 3-minute package in the evening news. They hear a couple of words that float by, and all they know is that they're going to go down to their local fire station, they're going to vote, they're going to get a sticker that says I voted, and they walked out the door. But how has mischievous activity worked its way in? In other words, this was a process that worked without overt interference for years. What's gone wrong?
Yeah, this was, I did not go to Washington with election integrity on my radar. Let me start by saying that. This was not a primary focus. It was not until I became a senior member on the Oversight Committee, we had our first case of COVID in the United States. Janet, think of it. We had our first case in the very next week in Oversight Committee. We had hearings that started talking about how we needed to change our election laws, federalize them because a pandemic was coming. People may be sick, not able to go to vote. There may be lockdowns, whatever. There started a series week after week after week of hearings about the need to change our election laws and to federalize them. And this was like a red flag that went up inside of me. Like, the rest of us are trying to figure out, what is COVID going to mean for us, for our families, for our country? Where is this potential pandemic going to take us as a country? And here, the other side of the aisle was having one hearing after another saying we need to change our election laws. And from that, what happened, Janet, just to be honest, and it happened so rapidly, but different states, unfortunately, oftentimes unilateral decisions were being made apart from the legislatures of those various states. Unilateral decisions were being made by Secretary of States or other individuals similar, where they just started, under emergency powers of COVID, they started changing the election laws and things that we never, ever would have accepted as being acceptable for elections came into play. Things like ballot harvesting, things like drop-off boxes and mail-in ballots and sending ballots to everyone on the voter files, and one thing after another, just massive erosion of election principles, election integrity principles, started just popping up all over the country. And now, here we are, years removed from that time, and some states have made some significant changes to take back some of that lost ground and to ensure our election processes again. Other states have not done so. And so we find ourselves in many ways behind an eight ball of whether or not the voice of the people is going to be accurately heard. And this rates over and over among the top issues of concern for people across the country, and for good reason. Fortunately, there's a movement, I believe, that has started. Dozens of states have made great strides in this. But the movement, the voice, the will of the people, I believe, is going to continue to push this issue to the forefront, that even in states that are resisting to go back to principles of true integrity in the election processes, they're going to be forced to do so because the voice of the people is that strong on this issue.
I so appreciate your optimism on this. And I think that that whole COVID experience, among the multiplicity of takeaways, has to be a couple of things. Number one, and I'd love your take on this, the fragility of some of our rights. You know, we have taken for granted the transcendence of these rights, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and one swipe of a local magistrate's pen, and suddenly we saw that First Amendment right eviscerated. I was struck with how quickly these inalienable rights, I mean, given to me by God, not by government at all, could be taken away. So I think now the second go around, I think the average American is going, wait, not so fast. I had a wake-up call. I realized that if too much power resides with an individual, this takes us back to that whole Rex Lex thing we were talking about before. If too much power resides with an individual, I lose the opportunity to let my voice be heard. So as these states are grappling with these various issues, this is why I think friends listening all across the country need to recognize this isn't just a Washington, D.C. issue. This is your backyard issue as well, is it not?
It absolutely is, and that's why we need to take ownership of it, if you will, and to recognize that our voice as citizens of the various states and our country as a whole, we have the voice to take back that which has been taken from us. And I tell you, if we don't do so, we're going to wake up one day and see an entirely different country than what we grew up in. And I think many people are coming to that realization as well, because much of that is happening right under our nose as well. So
exactly.
This is an urgent time. We're at a crossroad in our country. We are going one way or the other. And this is the moment that both the body of Christ has to step up and have her finest hour and have a voice of clear truth in the midst of all the lies and deception that are out there. But secondly, a time for the people as a whole, for their voice to be heard, and that primarily is done at the ballot box, and therefore that issue must be held in the highest esteem with the greatest integrity.
Amen, amen, exclamation point. Now you know why the book is called Sacred Trust. Also, you know why so many of us miss former Congressman Heiss's presence in the Capitol, but I know he's doing spectacular work as senior vice president at the Family Research Council. Integrity matters, by the way. It always has. You and I in our own sphere of influence, right in our own Jerusalem, before we mess out into Judea and Samaria and the outermost parts of the world. You influence, you occupy, you let your light so shine, you use that voice, and you step into the privilege of exercising that sacred trust known as voting. Also, based on our conversation today, with real specificity and with a burdened heart, start praying for the men and women God has called to serve in Washington, D.C. It may have a Capitol dome, but it is a mission field nonetheless. Congressman, thank you for an outstanding and memorable conversation. We'll see you next time, friends.